All right, guys, welcome back to Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. We have a very special guest today, our first guest of 2021, and I'm very excited to introduce her and to talk to her and to open a door into her life for you. but first, just want to say that if you are listening to us, wherever you listen to us, if you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes, give us a good rating or a review or a comment or so. It really helps new people find the show. And if you'd like to financially support us, you can go to patreon.com/JordanPrince. And for as low as, I don't know, like $3 a month, you could put money towards us trying to get new equipment. And we're going to try and get into live streaming and video podcasting. So all of those things would go towards making a better show for you. And now that that's out of the way, Mr. Batscheider, how are
hello,
you?
Hello, hello. Nice to talk to you again. And I'm so hyped that we finally got our first guest of the year. You know, like how I asked you every week, like I guess for 3 months now, Jordan, do you have someone? Could we get a guest again? And so mm-hmm. I'm super happy that we have a guest tonight.
You know, it was crazy how that turned out because I remember us talking about that and I kept feeling like I just didn't have an option in mind. And then I was asking people and texting people about if they knew someone, but it just was kind of falling flat for a few months. And then all of a sudden, there's this one particular post on Instagram that I didn't expect anything from. And then we got first our guest today, and we got like seven more people who seem really interesting that could work out as interesting guests. So, so without further delay, I'm very happy and very proud to introduce, this is a friend of mine, a very talented artist from Barcelona. Please welcome Anna Pascabota.
Hi, good evening, schönen Abend. How are you? Buenas noches, buena nit.
That's right. Don't forget where you come from.
Exactly. How are you?
But we're really, oh man, honestly, I'm really excited to finally have not only just a new guest on the program, because it's been a long time. Like, this is the 57th episode. We had our last guest on the 50th, but before that was a long time.
Mm.
It just didn't line up right, so... You know, there's that excitement, but also because it's you and I haven't seen you, I feel like in, what's it been, 2.5 years or something?
I have no clue at all. I was thinking that today, like in the shower, was like, how much time? I'm sure that it's 2 years because I was 1 year in residencies, so I was not in Munich. And I will say plus one for sure. So
yeah,
we are busy people, Jordan. We are busy people.
You're very busy. I wasn't busy at all.
No,
I was begging to be busy, and now I'm busy. But then I wasn't busy. No, but it's so great. Now I remember we actually had a dinner at your house with a previous guest we had on the show. Do you remember Vivi?
Oh, really? Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I will not tell anyone why I'm laughing, but it was a really nice evening.
You're laughing because she's a very funny girl.
Oh, yeah. She's amazing. Yeah. I would say that we didn't have a piano at home. That was the missing part because
So well, that would have been really cool.
Yeah.
But that was the last like real close hang I remember having with you and your partner and...
Yeah,
that was such a long time ago. But Vivi was one of our really early on guests on the show. And
great.
She has really crazy stories. But I want to talk about you. I want to talk about Anna. So can you explain kind of, well, first off, what you do, like what makes you artsy fartsy a little bit for people who don't know you?
When I was thinking... When I saw the first time the title of the podcast, like Artsy Farsi, I was like, what are they talking about, farts? So I have to say, as an artist, I fart too. Yeah.
But your farts come out like in pastels exactly. And rainbows.
Like with some kind of aesthetic and concept. So I try to fart with aesthetics and concepts. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to
do. That's why you're on the show. That's why you're on the show.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know. I think all artists or all people that do art are trying to create some realities. Like we are like a shaman, like we're trying to see the future, to control the future, to express ourselves, but like express what we are living. So I'm really interested on all the how models or how we create as a human models or like system structures, organizations, theories to understand the world or life. And that doesn't mean that the life is like that, but I'm interested on all of that. So I do a lot of collaborations with other fields, like not only in arts, but outside arts, like scientists or whatever, like mostly with scientists. I that helps me a lot, actually, because sometimes if you're producing something or you have some idea, I realize that when I have any block, talking to people helps me quite a lot. So at the end, after so many years, I realized that it's a way to work. So everyone with their field, like, doesn't matter if you are like politician, physicist, hairdresser or something, doesn't matter. So everyone tries to understand life and reality in his own point of view, like with his own point, feel and all of that. So I'm trying that too. And for sure, I will never get a good answer. But I'm enjoying trying. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, related again with farts. No, you fart, and it's so nice to try, no? Because at the end,
to fart?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's what comes out. It's for me. It's like, okay, it's a gas, but I will not say it's the same thing, or is you don't do the same production as you do in the toilet. So you know what I mean?
That's
I
true.
Mean, you don't get a product. Product.
It's slightly different, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's nice to see and to try.
Well, like, can I ask what would the... Sorry, there's a fly on the mic. Can I ask what the difference would be, for example, if you're doing an exhibition or an art piece connected to a scientific field versus if you're doing one for a presentation in perhaps like an institute? Mm-hmm. You know, can you break down... You know, you say you try to build these realities in a sense, and can you explain more about what your, how you represent these different realities for these different fields and what those experiences were like for you?
I think I it doesn't matter the presentation place, so the art place. It could be in an institution or not, but I have to say, I have always this scientific background or interest at the end, because I have no idea about science more as what in the high school.
That makes three of us.
Good. We are a group already. Because with two, you are a couple. Exactly. Three is the minimum for a group. I don't know. Sometimes I read a lot. I try to be open. I try to get what people, I try to get close to nerds. Let's say that. That's a
explains
hobby.
Why you're here.
Exactly. I think, I don't know, they're fascinating. And for sure, as a hipster, nerds are the new trend. But I have to say, it's fascinating when you meet someone who really loves what he's doing. So with that, it came to me that I met different scientists that are fascinating about her job. So that makes really easy to work with them. And mostly we talk, actually. So I have some interest. I found something that I have no clue at all. So I try to understand that in a way I don't do an exhibition that it's a lie. You know what I mean? Like if I'm talking about quasi-crystals, that was a work that I did in 2018, and I present in Kunstarkaden in Munich. I was working with these quasi-crystals, and I was not sure if I really understand what this quasi-crystal are. Because I know, okay, a crystal, what is a crystal? I know Swarovski, I know all of that. But I was like, what? Quasi? It's like fast crystal, but not
sort of.
Exactly, it's like okay, you are not the first one, but you are the third one. So yeah. You don't get in the picture. So that's why I went to people in the university to talk with them, and with all of that conversations, the work develop, and then at the end. I do my work, but it's not that I have never exhibit in a science institution yet. It was always in art context institutions or something like that. But well, related, like for example, with this quasi crystal, the work named in German, it's the title "Annäherung an eine Quasikristall." So approximation to an quasi-crystal. I was interested that these quasi-crystals they have an aperiodical structure. That means they have a symmetry, they have a system. So it doesn't, you see there, like it's not chaos at all in one dimension, two dimension, and third dimension. So it's like, oh, it seems good to me. But the interesting thing is when you turn this structure, like in two dimensions, no? You turn this structure 19 degrees, this structure doesn't fit to the first one structure. So that's how you prove that it's aperiodical. So blah, blah, blah. The thing is that quasi-crystals are actually crystal in a four or higher dimension. So they are perfect. They are actually a crystal. But because we live in three dimensions, we will never experiment that. So we will understand that, but we cannot experiment that. So what?
Because these crystals exist in a different realm from the one that we exist in, we'll never be able to experience them.
Exactly.
The way that they're described. Okay.
Exactly. So we can describe like in first dimension with Fibonacci sequence, like this sequence in mathematics. In second dimension was what I did with my artwork. I present a mosaic like in the ground.
You presented a mosaic on the ground.
Yeah, that you can step on.
Can I just ask first, since I really want to know more about what you're putting down. What was the design of it and the colors, and how did you put it together? How long did it take? Mm-hmm. Like,
it takes quite a lot because at the beginning you think you will do that in a one way, and at the end never works. So you have to find a plan B. So at the end it was a room really big, like mostly 18 quadrat meters, yellow. Mm-hmm. And then on this yellow carpet, like it was a plastic carpet in yellow, really kitschy, really bumming in your eyes. I put, how do you say in English actually? Fliesen is in German. Do you know that word? I have here Fliesen. Tile. Yeah, tile.
Oh, tile. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I put tiles on that to create this structure. And this structure is based on a Penrose structure, so in an aperiodic structure. And that was the way that I represent this quasi-crystal. And then as a viewer, you could go inside of this room and step on that.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was like in a playful way, you understand the structure of the quasicrystal. Because you realize...
Okay, so if I'm... Mm-hmm, go ahead.
No, because you realize, oh, there is a symmetry. I can see it's not chaotic. It seems to me as in a bathroom with all these tiles, nice mosaics that you can see, no? But when you step on that, you realize, oh, my steps change. So something is wrong here, but it seems quite nice and symmetrical, but it's not because it's aperiodical. So as a viewer, you could be there and step on this room and make whatever you want. And then it was a video loop there of this, I don't know the name neither, but I will show you. Maybe you can help me.
Okay. She's just reaching on the shelf and grabbing. What is this? It looks a bit like a rainbow colored dreidel.
Yeah, exactly. So it's quite playful too. And this video was about this object moving and never falling. So it was fake. But for me, it was important to have this video, to have this loop of something that everyone knows that is an addition. It's a construction of a movement, because this movement could not happen in our three-dimensional or in this mosaic happen.
Okay, hold on. we're diving in really heavy, really early. I just want to make sure that I get something right. So to represent this abstract description of a quasi-crystal, your art installation was a mosaic made of tiles on the floor to try and represent something in our physical world that we can't see otherwise, right? Is that right?
Exactly. It's like a shadow of this quasi-crystal at the end. Because this quasi-crystal, named quasi-crystal because it's aperiodical and it is quasi in our reality, but in a higher spatial dimension is a crystal. And at the end,
I think I'm gonna keep this phrase in my head forever, because I actually know a lady named Crystal, and next time I see her, I'm gonna think like, do I really know you, or are you just a quasi crystal?
Exactly.
But
nice.
I really love how fast we have gotten so deep in such a specific topic.
It was really fast.
This is fired up. But this is awesome, and I
it's great.
And I really can identify with this kind of approach. I work as a journalist, and I have the kind of same approach, because I always had so many interests, but I never was a super expert in one of these fields. And then I realized, okay, this job gives me the opportunity to hang out with those nerds and feed from their information and their approach, etc. So I would be super interested, you being an artist that feeds from that, how did you get there?
Yeah, let's start that's a great question, Mo. Like, let's start at the beginning. I want to ask you, I have some things written down. There's a lot that I don't know about you, which is really sad, because you're such a nice person. So I want to know a bit, you know, first off, you're coming from Barcelona, right?
Exactly.
So tell me a bit about your family life and maybe how you got interested in artwork.
That's interesting, because when I was a child, I wanted to be a president of Catalonia.
Really?
Yeah, I was convinced on that. Really, really. It was like, yeah, my family always, we talk quite a lot of politics and also football. That's the main subjects. And actually football, like Barca and Madrid, have a lot to do with politics. So, and then I got to the high school, and in Spain, you get, like, it's not like in Germany that you have like a high school with all and then you can go to university and do whatever you want. In Spain, maybe they changed that. I have no idea. But at my time, you had to choose what kind of field or specialization you want. So I choose science and technology because it was the specialization that I could get more options after that. So I have to say Yeah, I choose the high school that give me more opportunities because I was like a student, like a good in everything. I was not excellent, but I was good on all.
Like average. I was an average student as well.
Yeah, it was like okay, I'm okay, and I think well, it's interesting. And if I had a problem with any subject, it was more related on the teacher, but not in the content itself, because I thought everything is interesting. And
okay, so if the teacher wasn't like giving the right motivation or so, like
then I get
that's
bored.
Where the blame falls in a bit. Sure,
then I get bored, and then like I remember like some history teacher was really hard for me, and because it was more like learning and memorizing all the stuff and then vomit that in the exam and then forget it.
Right.
So that was quite annoying to me. But I have to say, I have fun with math and I have fun with literature and I have fun with arts. So it was like, oh, okay. So I did that as like high school on science. And then the last years it gets, I think, at that point, I want to do art. I was already doing some analog photography.
Oh, okay. So you started kind of like with this interest.
Yeah, I had. Yeah. And as a teenager, I did theater. I volunteer in my neighborhood with refugees thing. So I was really active, and also in traditional culture, like Catalan culture, like with dance and all of this kind of folk rituals.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you perform? Did you perform like dances?
Like dances, yeah. Really,
that's
really crazy.
Cool. Well, I didn't know that.
It's my past, let's say.
How old were you at that time?
I started when I was 16, I think. Yeah.
Crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
So you were doing these dances and you were super active in your community and you had these kind of, you were interested in everything and kind of outgoing and like passionate. And then you're choosing art. Was there another artist or something you saw or experienced that made you feel like this is something I want to start with? Or was it just like, let's go for it?
I thought that maybe it was a mix of many things because in my family, there is no artist at all. No painter,
I was gonna ask.
Not writers, anyone. But my mom is always a person who give me a lot of space to be creative or space to board. Like having the place to play, it's really important as a child.
She gave you the freedom.
Exactly. So if I wanted to try something, she was, okay, go ahead. I help you that you don't make any thing broke or something like that. So that's a good thing that I think as a child or as a teenager, I had this this security to try things. And then my dad is really creative in a way because he's a pastry, like conditor. So yeah, I think
what does that mean, Mo?
Conditor is
like pastry.
Yeah, pastry crew.
Like fancy baking.
Conditore.
Like pastry crew.
This is just a small joke. I don't mean to interrupt, but I always think of this joke. I tell my German friends that, like, for those who don't know, like, Konditore is a German word for like the sweets in a pastry in a bakery. Blah blah blah. And whenever I see that word, I always think that it sounds Japanese.
Oh, really?
I always think it's like, konditore, you know? Because you see, like bakery is like bakery. It's so easy to understand. And then like, konditore, it's just like, oh, okay.
Where'd they get that one from? Nice. That's so nice. The only word that I know in Japanese is tamagotchi.
Tamagotchi.
And the funny thing is
Domo arigato.
Someone tell me, I don't know if they make fun of me or not, so maybe someone here can tell me more, but they tell me, a Japanese woman tell me that this chi is like the small egg. So you, Jordan, you will named Jordanichi. Or you, Mo, you are...
I like that.
Mochi. As a small
Morichi.
Mo. Yeah, yeah.
Like emoji. Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Like emoji.
Oh, wow. Great. Yeah. Yeah, so my dad moved past
yeah, you had this childhood with like a really supportive mom and then no other artists, but what was your dad doing? Sorry?
Pastry.
Right, right, right. He was doing that.
Exactly. So he was teaching
that. We talked about it so far that I forgot. I'm sorry.
That's a moment. Yeah. So who knows? And I know that in my school, all the teachers expect of me that I will be a great scientist and I will do biochemistry or being a doctor or something like that. And it was, I think it was in a way a kind of revolution to say, no, I'm not doing that. I can do that.
Like a rebellion.
After. Yeah. Yeah, could be. And I have to say art at that time, for me was a time with a lot of changes because my parents got divorced and was like a lot to do in that time. So for me, in a way, it could be that art was a place where
to vent,
I could have a space and it was all about me. Yeah. So to have more attention or like self-care. Who knows? But it was nice then to do the like all the exam access to the academy in Barcelona, and I found there so nice people, crazy, like really nice people, and also people like really mix things, and it gets to me like interesting. And then after 4 years in Barcelona, I moved to Paris to finish my degree there.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
That was also a big step for me, like, yeah, sure. moving there. But that was so a funny time. For sure, I was scared a lot, but I have a good support, like friends who always, it's amazing to have this kind of friends who always think that you are the best and always they are always ready to tell you, you will do that. You will manage that. So yeah, I always think on that, and I'm really grateful of them because without them, with all these people and resources, I'm sure that I will not be in Germany.
I just want to, before we jump into your life in Germany, because I really, like, as the immigrant part of the title, that's something that interests me a lot, how you've adjusted to it and acclimated and things. But I think something you said that was so interesting to me that I think is really common amongst creative people is that you said after your parents' divorce, you found sort of a free space in art. And do you think that your path would have led the same way that it did had they not divorced?
I'm not really sure. For me,
you see that so often with musicians or filmmakers, you know, like families.
Absolutely. What I see is that all the artists have a fucked up family. And so much family issues, I have to say. Crazy.
It's really common.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I have good artist friends. Mostly they got to therapy or they did therapy or they are doing therapy because there's quite a lot of issues. And I think art, doesn't matter if it's a musician, writer or visual arts, is a great place to work on that. Yeah.
I think it makes a lot of sense, like expressing things in a certain way. And
yeah,
I mean, it's maybe more on the nose when it comes to like filmmaking or songwriting. You have like a kind of story that tells your part of your story in a way. And maybe it's more literal, maybe it's more figurative. But I think with artwork too, it's really interesting to see how people kind of grow and design things just from their hands. You know, that can represent something that they want to say for the installation or even for something that they want to say about themselves. And that's super cool.
Yeah.
And you I was have just to thinking.
Be, yeah. You have to be go also ahead. No, a lot go ahead. Of, you have to be quite brave because not everyone is able to confront all of that things. It's never easy. I don't say, I wouldn't, I mean, with that, I don't mean that artists are better persons. That's a lie.
I mean, our show is about artists, so I think we can have an opinion.
No, but in a way, it's brave. It's quite brave.
Sure.
For me, because and also you can try, but then if I see how many years you are trying and trying, it's like wow. Well, because
the perseverance is brave, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. You have to, with all this economic and system and all of that stuff. Yeah.
So you were going to university, and was that when you won your first award for your artwork?
No, that time was the economical crisis. It was, okay. Barcelona was fucked up. Spain was fucked up, all the South Europe was fucked up. So I get quite political at that time. So I went to demonstrations, I slept in the street protesting. And that was a really important time for me, because I remember in the university teachers telling us, doesn't matter, I mean, they tell us you will not be able to be an artist, so enjoy the time now. And wow, that's still there for me, because the politicians in Spain tell us or our generation that we will not have future, and they tell us that in TV. So I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I saw quite a lot of existential problems. And I was sure that a lot of my family issues was related of how fucked up was the system. So art...
But that's so crazy, just for a second, because like the financial crisis, like growing up and living in southern Germany, you didn't really experience that at all.
That's true.
Like, probably only if you have your own business and you are, I don't know, connected to you do business in Southern Europe, etc. But you didn't experience that financial crisis here. You would read it in the news, like where you see the effects, but you would not experience them on your own.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I was not in South Germany, but that's true, because when COVID came, or when COVID started, I was so, so scared. I freaked out. And I was with my boyfriend. My boyfriend is from Munich. And he was also scared in a way.
You had... Wait. You had a thing for a German guy?
Yeah.
It's interesting to hear that. I didn't expect that.
He was also quite scared, but not so scared as I was. And it was interesting to realize that all this trauma from this economical crisis in 2008-10 came alive as a ghost in a way. I was like freaking out. I was thinking like, oh no. I was not so worried about the virus, because I was like, I think science will find a solution there. But I was so worried to again live all this crisis consequences. And so now it's better. But it's true that I was never, I thought that it was, that this crisis in 2010 was in all Europe more or less. But then when COVID came and German people were okay, they didn't react like I was reacting. They are afraid, but not in the same point. Because for sure, I remember so many people losing their homes, losing their places.
Right. Yeah.
And seeing also in my neighborhood how people decide to take them, to take the life himself, like suicide. And that was there in front of me and being 20. And I was like, what?
That's crazy. That's so crazy.
So for me, it was okay. I will not be an artist, but I have to do another thing. So that was an interesting and nice time, really emotional
Do you think if you hadn't become an artist now that you would be like seriously devoted only to political activism?
Who knows? Yeah, it's a good question, because as a child, I really believe that I will be a president.
That's so cool.
But then I realized, oh no, that's not a good job at all. No,
it's a difficult job for sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I know. I don't do political art. Like, there is some people who take that as a subject on his art production. I think I'm not that kind of artist, but that doesn't mean that I'm not political. I'm criticize a lot of things.
Right. It's just not your main emphasis with your artwork.
Yeah. Because I think I produce artworks about things that are interesting on that. And all is related. We are part of the system, so all is related on these political issues and technological issues. So we are part of a system, like, with a lot of knots and intersections. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying as a human being or as an artist to live inside of this mess as everyone. But I think being a politician, I'm having these issues right now because in this Sunday we will have to vote in Catalonia. So we will have a new parliament. And I was having struggled to decide who I will vote.
Can you explain, like, for people who don't know anything about the Catalonian political system, can you break down a little bit about why you're having a tough choice and what they represent?
I have my issues because I was always voting left parties, but in Catalonia or in Spain, you have quite a lot of parties on left, so it's quite fragmented. And in the right, there are like two or three mostly. And so they're quite strong because they're less. But yeah. in the left, you have quite a lot, so it's difficult to choose one of them. And right now I have the feeling that the left parties, they're always arguing with and discussing between them. And that makes all really sad. But it's interesting that, like, maybe we'll not talk about Catalonia independence movement and all of that, but being a Catalan person in Germany, it's interesting to say that Spain has not the same structure as Germany. But in the medias, a lot of people, especially Munich, make the analogies or the comparison between Bavarian and Catalonia, because Bavarian.
Really, compare them?
They compare them in a way because they say that Catalonia is a rich region. It's rich for sure, but Madrid too and Basque too. So we're not the richest region.
Okay.
That's not 100% true. And also because we have our own culture, that's also something in Bavaria really important. And we have a different language. That's, again, not a thing. So for sure, we have a lot of dialects. Like in Mallorca, they talk Catalan, but in a really nice dialect. And Valencia, they talk also Catalan. So it's... So that's important thing, because Spain is not a federal state. So we have autonomies. That means that not every region have the... Well, we are not federal states. It's not like USA. It's not like Germany. And I had the feeling being here in Germany that not everyone knows that everyone think, all the countries goes like it's a federal state, but not like French don't, and no. Spain not neither, but Catalans or Catalan politicians or the last years or with all this kind of Catalonia independence was about being federal. And so that could be something important if someone have no clue about Spanish structures and all of that. So,
you know, in America, you know, we just keep it real simple. You know, we got someone over there on the left, and you got somebody over there on the right. You know, you just gotta pick
and at
one
the end
of them.
They're both on the right side. If you look,
I mean, you know, you just perspective. You know, you just pick one of them and you just, you know, go to work.
Yeah, but you don't trust your population enough to vote by themselves.
Hell no! Popular vote. That's too liberal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool to get like an insight into your, you know, your political activism. And it seems that you are definitely extremely, you know, educated about this and passionate about it. And it's really cool to see that, because I didn't even know that side of you for the longest time, that was such a big part of your life. But it definitely seems to be. And, you know, what I really also want to know, like, even more about kind of is, you know, since you heard or you expressed that people compare Catalonia to Bavaria, you know, can you talk a little bit about your first year in Germany and what that was like for you as a foreigner? And you know, we're going to talk about, I want to talk to you about adjusting to the culture and the language. And
that
everything.
Year was crazy, really crazy. So I wasn't.
What year was it?
Wow, it was 2012 or 13. I'm not sure anymore. I think 13 because I moved in 12. Yeah. So I was in Paris at that time and I went to Barcelona to make paper things and mm-hmm. make a bigger bag. And then I moved to Munich and the first year was really hard because I had no clue in German. I could not
Same,
speak
yeah.
any word. I was like, ooh, ooh. And I was here like in this clean state. Like if you never are in Munich, you will be so surprised how clean this city is and how many yes. expensive cars you can see in front of your door. It's like, what? You feel like in a shop.
BMW, Mercedes. BMW.
Audi. I'm like, wow. Yeah, so it so seems true. like a lollipop country in a way. Like, okay.
I like that term.
It's like all happy, all clean. It was like, right. wow. So the first year I mostly didn't pay any underground tickets because I had not so much money. So
I had the same issue.
And it's so expensive. My God.
So for those who don't know, when you take the subway in Munich illegally, mm-hmm. meaning you don't buy a ticket, it's called Schwarzfahren, like riding black, like riding under the table. And it's 60 euros right on the spot. I mean, they have these secret people in these civilian clothing and they just pull you over and they ask you for your ticket. And if you don't have it, they walk off the train with you at the very next stop and you're busted.
Exactly. But I don't know how it was with you for you, Jordan, but in my German courses I learned quite a lot how to deal with this kind of underground things. So
do tell.
So the fact is, if you have you got this Schwarzfahren, you got this busman like this. You have to pay at the end, no? But they ask you, they send you this paper to like this money to pay by post. Like you can pay that at the moment, but if you say I don't have enough money, they will send it to you that you can pay that in a week or something like that.
Right.
The good thing is if you give a Spanish address or Italian or Czech Republic, and doesn't matter, this paper will never come at home. So for sure I was living in Munich, but I never gave them this address. So that was one strategy that I learned from a Croatian woman in my German course. And the other one, this strategy was from an Indian guy in German course. This was quite special for visual artists or like people who like to do things with paper, let's say. So you got your here in Munich, if you buy like a multi-ticket, you have always to stamp it with the same paper, no? But if you take glue, but this solid glue that you use in the school, you put it like there in the paper, and then you stamped, and when after you stamped all, you take this glue off, and you can stamp again.
Oh, now that is some sneaky, sneaky shit right there.
So you're doing there like an invisible second stamp ticket?
It's funny that the guys who pull the ticket wouldn't think like, is this laminated? I just want the card to look professional. What's the problem? I'm a very careful writer, and I want to take care of my ticket. Don't judge
me. So you have to take also this ticket from your shoe or something that they see. Oh, this guy is a mess. So because normally they will have a look. Oh, this looks shitty. So no. That's you not cheating, it's just technical.
One of the first times that I got busted, I moved in like at the end of 2015, and I think it was early 2016 or so, I got busted. More or less because I just wasn't paying attention and got lazy with it. Because in New Orleans, there's nothing like this. So it was the first time I had to get used to it. Oh. And I thought, screw it, I'm not going to do it. Anyway, I had to do it, and I got busted. And I really tried to play the game of like, oh, I'm so sorry. Sure. I'm just visit. Like I was like, do you speak English? I'm so sorry. I'm just visiting a friend and they didn't tell me. And there was only one time that was kind of okay. I think in the end, they still sent me something, but I kept trying to trick them and I kept getting busted. I'm such a bad spy. I would never, ever fly in like a James Bond movie. I would be the guy who dies in the first 10 minutes who sends a message to the rest of the community like, well, they killed one of our guys, so we have to go infiltrate.
Just a bad badass.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just a bad fat ass, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, so the first year was really interesting. I did only German courses in the morning, like really intensive courses. And in the afternoon, I started to teach Spanish to make some money. But also
that's a good idea.
Without contract. So that was also a funny thing because I was outside of the system. But I had no idea. So that was a nice time. And then I applied for the academy because, I had already my degree, but here in Germany, you can study for free. Well, you have to pay the taxes. That's nothing. If I compare,
nothing.
For sure, Barcelona, it's not England or USA, but it's still money. I mean, I remember my years in Barcelona was quite a lot of money that I had to find some kind of scholarships and working at the same time. So when I...
I was going to say, if you compare what you paid to go to school in Barcelona, can you, if you feel comfortable saying it, can you say what you paid for a semester in Germany?
So I was paying, I think, 1,400 for a year. So it's
1,400
for a year.
For a year.
I think so, more or less. So it's comparing to USA and in England, it's nothing. And I don't know how, with Bologna, because I was the last year before all of this Bologna system stuff. Mm-hmm. So I know that now it's quite fucked up and it's not so cool anymore. But at that time when I was studying, you had quite a lot of ways to manage this kind of money because I was working in the university, like in an art department. And in the library and different places. And then if you got like a one, like a A, like the best note in your class, you got this credit for free. So you have to be a Klugscheißer. You have to be like the better one for saving money at the end. So quite stressful system, but okay, that was a way. And here in Germany, I remember that you pay for a year 400 maybe, because every semester is like 200 something, isn't it, more?
Yeah, but it's but you don't pay anything for the actual studies. You just pay for
taxes.
I don't know, all of the paper you get.
Exactly.
and all the organization infrastructure.
Yeah, and you get this underground and bus ticket, so you can use on the weekend you can use for free all the public services, and also between 20 like 9 p.m. until 6 a.m. or something like that. So that was good thing also to combine all my tricks and being in university. So in the weekend I was like, oh, calm, finally, I can rest.
Well, it's like, how long were you in Germany before you applied to the university?
I was half a year. So I came in April, and I started in October.
Were you not nervous about applying to a university without being fluent in the language?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But on the Art Academy, depending on the teacher, or art teacher, because if you apply in the Art Academy, you are applying for a class. So you are applying for a teacher. That means that it has more to do with a job interview in a way. So you go there and you present your work and your person, and they say, okay, yes or no. So it's true that you need a B1, but they don't say at the beginning. So you can start, and then at the end you have to have a B1. That's true. And so when I was already in Paris, because my boyfriend was already in Munich, I did some interviews, and I was looking between Munich and Berlin, like in some teachers on the Art Academy. And then I decided, when I was sure that one teacher here in Munich will accept me. I mean, I got quite lucky because two teachers accepted me here in Munich and other in Berlin, like in UdK. But I decided this one here in Munich. And I was quite afraid because I know that the class itself was quite philosophical and conceptual. And at that time, when I started, was only one woman from Taiwan and another one from Korean. But both of them, they spoke really well German. So we're like, oh, fuck. So I was in the class. Okay, they are talking about, I don't know, Foucault, something. But I have no clue what that they say about that. So,
oh man, yeah, I know that feeling.
It was hard. But so that was my strategy, was okay, I'm moving on April, and until October I do my German course. And that was hard time because getting German so fast was, sometimes I was not sure that it was best idea. But then I started university and I had no clue what the people talk about. No idea. That's true. But the next year, I got better and better. And right now I'm feeling better in German as in English.
Crazy. That's crazy because your English is amazing. So, I mean, are you at a technical like C1 now or C2?
In German, C1. I stopped then. Then I
That's
thought,
amazing.
Okay, I don't have to make a PhD. No, no, thank you.
You can be really proud. I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm at that B1. I'm circulating around that B1 over and over and over, like always trying to relive it and refresh on it.
It's a hard point, that B1.
B1 is really...
Yeah. I had the same feeling. And as a Spanish teacher, I had the same feeling with my students. Like German students, that they got really good until B1, and that point, it's like, oh, it hurts your balls, really. And I have no balls.
It's kind of like, you do though, because you did this so quickly and so well. But like, it's just, you know, B1, for those who don't know, I mean, we've talked about it so much on the show in the past, but you know, it's just like you do levels of language, A1, A2, B1, B2. And then the higher you are into C2, the more fluent you are in that language. And B1 is just, you know, it's like that first major peak on the mountain climb. Like the first, you know, few hours of the trail are completely fine and you feel hydrated and you feel motivated and everything looks nice. And then you get to B1 and it gets really cold really fast and you're really thirsty and you ran out of water and you got blisters on your feet and it's really, really hard to just cross it, because finally when you cross it into C, from what I've heard from other people, it's not as difficult. It's more of a plateau.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? I had the same feeling when I was preparing for the C1 exam. It was not the same. It was more about forms, vocabulary, pronunciation stuff, but it was not anymore trying to understand the language structures and all of like getting the structure inside of you. It was it's another thing. So yeah, I cross the fingers for you.
Thanks.
I have to say, if everyone need to learn German, I think that helps me quite a lot, because a lot of teachers say, yeah, read things, no? And I was like buying these big newspapers, because in Germany the newspapers are like XXL. How could be that? I mean, in Spain are big, but not so big. And I was in USA and I thought, okay, there we'll have XXL, because in USA it seems like all XXL.
Everything's XXL.
But not the newspaper. Germans have bigger newspapers. And so I bought one. And it was like no images at all. All text, really small, like 8-10 points letters. I'm like, what the fuck? But I found a great magazine. To everyone who's learning German or any other language, like it exists also for French, Spanish, Italian, and English, named Deutsch Perfect. Do you know that, Jordan?
I'm sure that I've seen this somewhere, but I don't, I can't picture it in my head right now.
I have all these magazines from 2016 and 17, or so I can borrow you. Because you sure. Got this magazine in different levels. And it's easier. It's easier. So that helps me a lot.
Do you know this podcast called, I think it's a podcast called Slow German?
No.
That's one that I hear about a lot right now. Last year and the year before, I worked at this Grundschule with mm-hmm. you. Like, it was an international school, like all these people from all around the world. And the biggest thing that I heard the most about for learning German was this podcast from a lady. She's a German lady, and basically it's really straightforward. She just picks a topic, or she picks like a passage from a book or something, and she just reads it very slowly. Crazy. And that way you can hear all the pronunciation, you can understand like where the words separate, you know, because a lot of the time when people speak quickly, the hard part is hearing, like, was that one huge word?
Germans make huge, huge words.
And Germans have big newspapers and big words. Oh, hey, guys, let me just take like a 2-minute break here. We can keep going, but I just want to use the bathroom and get some more water.
Great.
All right, we'll just keep everything rolling. Just keep everything rolling.
Okay, so I don't stop my energy.
Just let it go, yeah.
Just let it go.
Good. Mo, how do you know Jordan?
Like, I kind of knew Evie / Evie's family since I was young, because we come from the same village. And in 2014 or 15, Jordan played an open air gig there and needed a bassist. And so somehow...
nice.
He came across me and we played the show together. And since then, I don't know, this friendship developed pretty weirdly, because we had points where we had more contact and less, and then points where we kind of only connected over this this thing we do at the radio station and this podcast, and then we started to play music again together, etc., etc., and now we're here.
Great, nice. And you're a journalist. Are you a freelancer or?
No. Like at the moment, I'm doing. I don't know if you notice a volontariat.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so you finish your studies and now you're getting some experience.
Yeah, exactly. Like this kind of traineeship thing.
Sure. And where?
At 94.5, like the station that also publishes this podcast. So this is like one of my projects I do there, and I can experiment with.
Great. Cool.
Yeah, that is awesome because I could bring that in because we do this longer than I do my volontariat. And so it was this crazy moment, like, okay, I can do something I already did before, but now I get paid for it.
Great.
That's crazy.
Wow. Oh, that sounds good. Crazy.
No.
So you live in Munich?
Yes.
Okay. Nice. Good.
And how do you guys know each other?
Jordan was working in Malefiz. I don't know if you... Yeah, you know that. Coffee.
Yeah.
So Ilan, my boyfriend, was also working there. And I was always, mostly the time, drinking coffee there. So... Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And Jordan is so crazy, guys. So every time that I know that Ilan was working with him, I was there. Like, okay, drinking my coffee. I remember I was always ordering a Berliner cafe and also like a pain au chocolat. They had so great pain au chocolat.
From Malefiz.
Oh, yeah. And that time was so nice. And I remember that I came always the 2 hours left shift from you and Ilan. And then, you close and you put so amazing music. And I was there, like, drinking coffee and getting fun because, Jordan, you're so crazy.
I'm so
like
crazy.
Telling jokes. I don't know. You don't realize that, but you're so funny.
Oh, thank you. Funny, I like. Yeah. Crazy, I'm never sure which way they mean.
No, good crazy. Good crazy, like good nerd.
Good crazy.
Yeah. I remember all the cleaning moment, no? Cleaning moment in Malefiz and coffee.
That
and
was so much
so
fun.
Much fun. I could not realize, like, wow. And that was because Ilan never had fun cleaning. And he puts music and he tries his best, but... I think he needs you.
Oh, man. You know, that was like the best, gastronomy job that I ever had.
It was really nice. Yeah.
It was amazing. Cool. The best food and the best coworkers and the greatest atmosphere and really good pay and just a general understanding and helpfulness. And
I mean,
I loved that job.
You had, I never worked there, but you had some stressful times, that's true, but
towards the end it was more stressful. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, towards the end, like, because Peter, the guy who owned the place, he wasn't very communicative about his plans for the place. He sold
that's
the
true.
Place and then told us we had like
that was quite a lot of drama. Yeah,
that was
true.
Stressful for sure. But that I'd say like from 2017 or 2000 like late 2016 maybe to late 2017, whatever that first year was the best time at that job just because, you know, like Elon is so great to work with. And, you know, we were there with Jake and the whole,
Regina,
the manager. Everyone was so great. And, you know, the coffee, you know, I got really into that coffee culture and was always, I would go there really early, like half an hour. I would go to my own job half an hour earlier than I have to. Who does that?
And
I would go there really early, like 6 a.m. or something.
Crazy.
And, you know, keep all the lights off and just put on like a really smooth Andy Schauf record.
Yeah, I discovered them because of you.
We went to that concert,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we got to this concert. Yeah, wow, that was nice. Yeah, that was great from this job because I think it was so much... new music inputs because of you, and that was
great. Well, Jake was also a big part of that. Jake is always
but
showing
both of you
music.
I mean, were so good.
That was such a good time. Yeah,
yeah.
Was that what you guys were talking about on the break? Was how we knew each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I still have your, I think it's your playlist, like 20 wishes.
Do you mean like the 12 songs for 12 friends album?
I remember. Yeah, that's for sure. But I think you did a playlist on Spotify. And I remember, I think it was from you. Yeah.
20 wishes. I don't remember that.
Maybe it was another, like, where, who knows? No, 80 tunes. What does it? No, or one for 19? Oh, I don't remember. Well, doesn't matter.
Oh, but not to plug myself too much in this episode about you, but because this is really new for me, but did you know that I have my own radio show now at Ego FM?
Absolutely. Ego FM. I was like, what? I could not hear that on Sunday because I was actually working with the program. I'm developing an artificial intelligence. So I was having my meeting on the morning. Wow. And so I miss it, but I'm looking for this Sunday. That's
so cool.
Step,
that's so nice.
Jordan, really.
I have to say the last couple of months were so lucky and so great for me. I mean, you heard the episode where I was talking about health insurance and stuff, but the reason for that drama was because I had great news, which is actually, one, the radio show at Ego FM every Sunday from 10 to 1.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, Mo here, like, we're really close friends. We've done this podcast for over a year now. And he recently helped me get a different job at this station, M94.5.
Great.
Because they're setting up some new production. I'm not sure if I can talk about it yet, but I'm basically helping them do that. And we just signed like a little paper together. But I'm really, that's so cool to like work alongside my friend and be in the same place where we can produce the podcast. Usually there's studios there. We just can't go there right now.
Amazing.
But, and Ego as well. So I'm so happy with
and
that.
And it's
right
a
now.
Big, big place. I mean,
Ego FM.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a crazy studio. And they have like, Mo, I don't know if you know this. You probably do know this way better than I do, but they're in like three major cities. I think they're also coming to Lisbon or something.
Oh, wow.
So, I know they are in like four or five cities in southern Germany.
Okay.
Munich, Stuttgart, etc. Like those kind of cities. But I haven't heard that they do anything international. But you also got to see, this is only where they got the frequency for like regular UKW radio.
Right.
But as far as I know, they are also pretty successful with their apps, etc.
Yeah, I just got their app. I didn't even know they had one until like the day before my show came out.
And those are great. I know so many people out of Munich and those cities where they air that use this app, because besides the regular radio stream, they also kind of curate like music-only streams in five different genres or something and different moods, etc., which are pretty nice.
Yeah, it's super cool. They like, as soon as you open the app, they have all their major playlists, and then you can go to like previous shows that they've had. They have some shorter programs, like 1 hour, kind of like this roughly, and you can check out podcasts and shows. Like my friend Sandra has a really popular show from Ego called Chelsea Hotel, and she interviews really famous bands, and it's a very cool show. Unfortunately, I can't listen to everything because it is German, so it's a lot of effort for me to listen through it, but she's really intelligent and a great interviewer, and that show's super cool.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
But I'm really happy about that. But I want to talk about Anna. So back to Anna.
Okay.
So, I mean, you've been in Germany since around 2013. That's around, I mean, it's almost 8 years, depending on when you came. I mean, do you have a lot of homesickness anymore, or do you travel home enough to where that doesn't matter?
I have a lot of homesickness since Corona. Yeah, since COVID.
Since Corona,
Yeah, because before, Barcelona is so close, so I used to fly quite a lot. I was feeling guilty because I was taking the plane quite a lot, maybe. But yeah, I know that I will be able to be there in 2 hours, 3 hours, more or less. And that makes me feel quite well, or makes easy to be in Germany because it was so close. But now since Corona, it's getting harder. And yeah, let's see. So,
What's your day-to-day life like right now since the lockdown?
Since right now I'm quite lucky, I have to say. So I'm having my struggles things, but I'm having a good life still, Corona, let's say. Because I have my own studio. It's not so close to my home. So it's in north of Munich and I live in south of Munich. So it takes me 50 minutes by bike. Because I don't want to take the underground. So it takes quite a lot. And then I'm exhausting and sweaty and blah. But yeah, and when it's winter, I'm still from Barcelona. When it's winter or rainy, I don't want to go outside. It's like, that's so a German thing that any German can call you and say, let's do a walk, but it's raining. Let's do a walk. It's raining. And I go outside and it's raining and you see the little child there playing and it's raining and they're wearing with this kind of Michelin
like super coats.
I'm getting that's a hard thing. So yeah, but I have my studio so I can work there, so I don't have to be 24 hours at home, and that's a good thing. that I can change. But because I don't want to take the underground, then it takes me quite a lot of time by bike.
Sure.
But it's okay. And last year, it was a hard year because a lot of plans that I had two solo exhibitions, like my first solo exhibition and then my second solo exhibition got canceled or got like moved. And that was not so easy, because one of these show got moved or got canceled like the day before I was planning to build exhibition. So I had already all prepared and all packed and was like, what? No, please. But I have to say right now, I'm happy that they moved that because I'm having two exhibition these years, and this year it's quite hard for everyone, and especially I think if you want to show something you have to compete between the exhibitions that like old present like the exhibitions that had to be in 2020 and the exhibition from 2021, so but the walls are the same and the places are the same, so and the competition is quite strong. So, and you have this kind of delay from two contemporaneities or present. So, I'm happy that I have these two exhibitions for this year. One is in Kempten in Allgäu.
Right.
So
that's
nice. I got the prize last year. So, and the prize was money and this exhibition. So we're like, woohoo! Yeah, because then
that's amazing.
Yeah, with that, that's why I was feeling quite lucky with, still COVID or Corona, but I got this prize and that helped me like to live at the end. And then I'm having in September another exhibition in Lemgo that's close to Bielefeld, where I was doing an art residency for a year. So COVID came when I was there. And yeah, so I have these two exhibitions that will come. And last year I got like different scholarships for projects. And I got also from DAD, this Deutsche Akademische Austauschdienst. Like it's a good institution if you are like German student that you want to go outside, or if you live outside of Germany and you want to come to Germany. Doesn't matter if you are an artist or whatever. So it's a nice institution, and they give me a research grant for Vienna. For me last year was like quite a lot of moving between Lemgo. They're in close to Bielefeld, like Vienna and Munich. So it was quite crazy with COVID and all of that. But it's still, I got some money that allows me to be able to make my research and my art projects and so on. And Another thing that I did, and it's like a pity because I had no big presentation of that. It was a book mm-hmm. named Stickers. And
I wanted to ask you about stickers. Yeah,
that's so, I mean, I got a lot of fun doing stickers. So
can you explain like what stickers is and how it came to you?
Sure. When I was doing my diploma, it came to me this idea, and I thought that I will do that. And at the end, I saw that it will be a bigger project. So when I was in Lemgo doing this residency, I got some kind of funding from different points that allowed me to produce this book with book house named Bom Dia Books in Berlin. They're really crazy people, but in good sense, really nice. It's a small book house, but they're producing all with so much love. So I write them and I told them my idea. So my idea was that I got a scholarship to produce my first book as an emerging artist. And my interest at that time was how objects or spaces can exist in two states, as objects or spaces themselves, and as an image of them. So if I have the image of Paris, I have the image of Paris, but I have also the city Paris, and how these logics are related. So with this idea, I wanted to take my works and produce this book with this idea, but with my works. And stickers is a way itself as a genre of artist books. Like you have artist books that explicitly devoted to a technique, like painting, sculpture, photography. And I wanted to do another category, stickers category. because I work with so much different techniques, and everyone, when you meet someone new, for sure, you try to categorize the people to get closer, to understand what
people like labels. They want to be able to identify it.
What kind of people are you? And you need to classify to understand what is going on there, what I'm looking on. So because of my art practices, as I said at the beginning, I'm interested in models and organization systems and all of that. These categories are a system. So I took stickers as a category to classify my works that actually are in various techniques. So for sure in the podcast you cannot see it, but it's a book with stickers of my works. And
that's so nice. It looks so cool.
I will send you one. And if everyone...
Oh, that'd be so sweet. We can post about it on the
Sure.
On the channel.
I will be really happy. So at the end, you've got one receive a book, like fully overflowing with stickers, waiting to be stuck on.
It's bursting with stickers. Yeah, it's completely jam-packed with stickers.
Exactly. So, and everyone designed his own book according to one's own idea. So at the end, every book is a unique edition. And the other thing is there is no text. So every artwork, sponsor logos, ISBN, barcode, everything is a sticker. All is about like reading images. These kind of stickers, I was always fascinated on stickers, but because they give the image a certain autonomy in a way. So the viewer takes the image as an object, and the book at the end is like about the interaction between a book and image, and how we interact with the reality. And perception at the end is an act of interaction with reality. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. So you got the book and some of them, so some of the stickers are already stuck it, but you finished the book. So you are in a way a kind of co-author or curator or also like a curator and collector in a way. So yeah.
Ah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that's super cool. That's really cool. I think I have just I have one more short two-part question for you.
Great.
What would you say so far has been your favorite or most crowning, most rewarding achievement in your very long list of incredible awards and acclimates? What has been your favorite achievement just for yourself and as an immigrant, your biggest obstacle?
Achievement. I'm feeling right now that I'm trying to get my achievement. Like,
you're still not quite at your what you think will be your best achievement yet.
Yeah, I'm working on that. I think with this artificial intelligence.
Yes,
project.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah, I think that will when it finish, it will be, because with this project I got two scholarships or two grants, one from Barcelona and the other from Munich. This one from Barcelona is from La Capella Museum. It's a great institution for contemporary artists that I always was looking to get inside, let's say. So in a way, it was already a big achievement for me. And also this grant from the municipality in Munich, that was amazing. And they already support me with this project, but this project is going on. But so that's why it's, I think that both of that grants are an achievement, but related to a project that I'm still doing. And so my project was like really short. What I'm trying to do is an artificial intelligence that do with, so like as a neural network that with data, weather data and weather sayings produce new weather sayings in German and in Catalan.
Can you explain that in the most, like you're explaining to a five-year-old just one more time?
Sure. So this artificial intelligence Sensi, this is the name of the artificial intelligence. She or he is learning with weather data, like cloudy, sunny, whatever, and also with weather sayings or weather proverbs to create new weather sayings.
Like predictions.
Exactly. Or, like interpreting also the weather. So, you know, in I looked on Google today, like in English, because I'm doing that in German and in Catalan. But in English you have some nice like, when the ass begins to gray, surly rain will come the day. Or rain before 7, clear before 11. This kind of sayings.
Oh, okay.
So I'm working with that weather sayings because, or this, yeah, these rules, they are quite a rules that represent an infrastructure in language. In a one way, it's a cultural heritage of a changing landscape, but also illustrate the mechanism, how we develop to gain a sense of control over future uncertainties or weather. So this artificial intelligence feeds or take all of this data information from weather and all of this weather sayings heritage in German and in Catalan to create a new one. And it's a big project because I'm the thing that how we are how we difference between artificial intelligence and human being still being creative. And what is that?
Right.
So this capacity to, or ability to failure, strolling, discovery, that's the difference. So I'm trying to, with this programmer, Amadeus Lederne, really great guy, we're trying to do that with this artificial intelligence. And let's see what's happened. So it has quite a lot to do with senses. What kind of senses can have a artificial intelligence? Also common sense. What is a common sense for AI?
For AI.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it's a big thing. And I think that is right now an achievement that I'm having. Yeah.
That's so interesting. I think that's really cool.
Thank you.
I think that does make sense that that would be like seeing your trajectory so far, that that would be your crowning achievement thus far.
Yeah, and it was great that I got this support, because without that, and the second question was, what was
your biggest obstacle
thing?
As an immigrant?
I think getting to know the structure, the system in the country.
German system, like the social system.
Yeah, and culture and all of that. Like, that's a hard obstacle. At the end, it's like every country have one, and you have to know that. But at the beginning, I think it makes not so much fun. It's more about an obstacle, because
it's a lot
hard.
Of learning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the word Entschuldigung, that was a big obstacle. My God, I remember it was the second German class and the teacher write this word in the wall. And I was like, what is that? And it took me 10 minutes to understand that means sorry. It was
that
so
word.
Crazy.
Wait, like the definition of the word was what was the problem, or was it pronunciation?
It was all. It was like... I was astounding how big was this word, how long was this word, how many consonants they have. And sorry, perdona.
Pardon. Yeah.
What? That was a big obstacle. And how you say that in the street? I was like, I need to take so a big breath. To get all the air,
Entschuldigung.
Yeah. And the people say like so quickly, like Entschuldigung. What?
Or they just say like Entschuldigung.
Yeah, Entschuldigung. Yeah.
Just
Entschuldigung. My God.
I remember one time I was in Munich, like near the city center, and there was a group of American tourists passing by me, but I didn't know that they were American yet. I found that out later. But they were walking past, and I bumped into one of the girls in the group by accident, and we turned to each other, two Americans in Munich, and went, Entschuldigung.
No.
And then they walked off, and I heard them talking. I was like, oh my God.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow. But Anna, this has been such an excellent pleasure to have you on here and to really like exercise my mind and my thinking and to give us a bit, you know, insight into your craft and your accolades and your journey as an immigrant. And just personally, I would love to say thank you so much for writing in and like reminding me that you're here, because you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. No, I'm really glad to know you. I mean, to know Mo for first time and to see you again or talk with you. I mean, you're
so nice.
A great artist, and keep it.
Coming from you, that means a lot.
Yeah, no, you're amazing.
Insane.
I mean, yeah, let's say we are amazing.
We're amazing.
No,
all three
it's
of us.
Nice to have friends, and it's nice to know now a new friend, maybe, Mo.
Absolutely.
And I think good thing about all of these art things or whatever is like getting contacts, getting close to nice people. That's a really important thing. That's helped me a lot moving here in Germany, being around nice people. That's important.
Definitely.
And I'm sure that, I mean, your podcast makes the life better. So
Now that you're on it.
No. I did my homework. I already listened to some of them. The past one.
Just as a personal question, did you when you researched the show, did you listen to any of the ones that had guests or just the recent episodes?
No, a little of everything. I heard, for example, this one with the designer from Brazilian.
Guy.
Yeah, Guy, really nice. And also Eileen and another one that I don't remember. Yeah, because the podcast is a great thing that you can like, okay, let's have a look. And because I need so much time to get to my studio. So sometimes I put your podcast.
And I
drive to bike. And it doesn't matter if I don't have time every week. I know they are there and they are in a way a temporal or it's like being in a bar and we don't have bars anymore. So
no.
Yeah, there's no bars, right? So this is kind of like, I saw a funny picture of a guy, like there was a guy who bought like a toy for his kid and on the cover of the box for the toy was like three people sitting together laughing at something like... And then he took a picture of himself just next to the box, like just next to the people in the picture, like laughing with them. And it was like me when I listen to podcasts.
Oh, yeah, but it is, isn't it?
That's what it should be like.
Yeah.
Like listeners should feel like they, obviously they cannot take part live unless you do a live show, but they
but
still
feel like they're,
like
in the
they're
room.
Part of the conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's so true.
And regarding the show, Anna, I think you definitely need to come back at some point because I want to know more about Sensi and the progress with your your weather forecast.
Oh yeah. I will let you know. And we are planning to do a website that you can request for a sentence if you will not need any more a weather app because you will have Sensi. So, and he will give you a sentence and you can then by yourself interpret and then know, okay, it will rain or not, or yeah.
That's awesome.
We have to bring you back and talk more about that.
Nice.
And we're going to put the links to, your website into the description. And if there's anything else that you want us to promote, just send me a text and we can put it into the promotion.
Great.
If there's nothing left from you, Moritz, then I think I will wrap it up here.
Nice.
You guys ready?
There's only one thing I already wanted to tell you, Jordan, last week, or ask you, but I forgot. Did you listen to the new Weezer album by chance?
I haven't.
Okay, but
do you like it?
In general, are you a Weezer fan, or do you feel this kind of Weezer vibe they had through the years?
I love the Weezer vibe, but I can't say that I've listened to every song that I'm a huge fan, but I definitely have no issues with Weezer.
Because what I really like about this band, and why some argue that they are a much greater band than many people think, is that they try so many things over the years and through the albums, but they still manage to keep this Weezer vibe, like we just mentioned. And the new ones is pretty poppy. And a lot of strings and easy harmonies, but it's a kind of a refreshing soundtrack when you're fucked up by lockdown. They also feature those Corona topics in some texts, and I really really like it. You should listen to the song "Playing My Piano." It's great.
Let me see what the name of the new album is.
Okay,
called.
Human, I guess. Yeah. Okay, Human.
Okay, Human. That's right. Okay, Human. Okay, I just looked it up. I'm gonna check it out after the show. Well, thank you very much, Anna. And I'll just say for everyone still with us here at the end, thank you so much for listening. You guys mean a lot to us. And again, wherever you're listening, please go to iTunes, give us a rating or a review or a comment. It really, 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 really helps new people find us way more than you'd expect. It's crazy how much that helps. Please go do that if you can. Or if you'd like to financially support the show, you can also go to patreon.com/JordanPrince And there you can help fund new programs like this. We want to get into live streaming and video podcasting and new equipment. So all that stuff helps out so much. Otherwise, thank you, Anna, so much for being with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I would say that we should end this all together with a countdown from three to one. And then we can all just stop recording all together. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right.
Okay, so all together, we're going to stop recording. Thank you for listening. In three,
tres, dos,
two,
un.
One, go!
Look out, baby, the saints are coming through. And it's all over now, baby blue.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von Jordan Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.